Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Women's Health for every stage of a woman's life, offering compassionate care and comprehensive obstetric and gynecological services from routine exams to specialized pelvic surgery. More information is available at 1-800-492-5538 or at www.umm.edu/Women's Center. I'm in the studio with my co-host, Anthony McCarthy, of course, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show every Friday night from 5 to 7 p.m. in this time slot. Last week, I think it was Friday or Thursday, I got a phone call from Dante Wilson about a situation that took place in Southwest Baltimore in Union Square, which is where for many years he had his program until he ran out of money and a place to have it in, which is one of the most effective programs dealing with young people in our community. And told me about the arrest of Christopher Taylor. Chris Taylor is someone I have met. He is the president of the Union Square Association. It sounded like a fairly bizarre case on one hand and maybe not on another. We're going to hear about that. We're also joined – Chris joins us in studio. We're also joined by Robert Giroux, who lives in Union Square. And we talked to the police this morning. This is all kind of very last minute. We called – Chris and I talked, I'll be very frank, about it last night on the phone as I was driving back to Baltimore. And we said we'd try to get on this tomorrow and have a conversation about it in the air. I called Commissioner Bielefeld, who could not make it tonight, but he was had a long talk with me about the case itself. We talked to Major Bloodsworth, who is commander of the district within which Union Square is. He worked all weekend, and this is his day off, and he could not make it in today. But the police did give us a statement. We've seen the reports, and we just wanted to talk about what this incident says in a larger spectrum about police-community relationships and how police deal with issues in the city and how community residents deal with the police in the city and why there seems to be such a disconnect sometimes. The number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We're joined in studio, as I said, by Chris Taylor, president of the Union Square Association, and Robert Giroux. Is Giroux or Giroux?
Giroux.
Giroux, who is a resident of Union Square. So, gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you.
So, Chris, tell us, give us what went on and why this has become kind of a crazy madhouse story. And why don't you start off with just the story itself?
Sure, sure. Is there any way I could just address two quick points?
You may.
Yeah. First, I want to say to the vast majority of Baltimore City police officers that I'm sorry this incident happened. It's been very trying for me to think about how to move forward with this. The majority of you are unbelievably upright, upstanding citizens. I have more respect for you now than I ever have because you do have a massive amount of power. I've seen it firsthand now, and you don't abuse it, the majority of you. So, and many of you have reached out to me to tell me that, you know, I have to do what I got to do. Second, I want to tell that the young girl that was on the steps there, that it was worth getting arrested for her. She had a right to have someone advocate for her. She came to me, to my house, and I think all the children of Baltimore City need to be treated in a better way. So essentially last Wednesday, I was in my home working on a project. My painters were painting my third floor window. They called me out and said there was two young girls. One was hysterically crying, claiming they had been physically and sexually assaulted on their way to school. So about 9:50, I walked outside, I talked to the girls, heard their story, sat them down, tried to calm them down, called the police. Two officers arrived about 20, 22 minutes later. The one beeline right to the girls, which would be the eventual arresting officer. The other gentleman, we had brief chat, well, you know, what took you so long? We were on this distant call, and then that was it. For the next 20 minutes he was interviewing the girls or so, I'd never talked to him. The principal of the school, Stuart Hill, came by. We talked. He inquired about the incident, whatnot. Some trash guys came by. I talked to them. When he was getting ready to leave, I asked him a very simple question: what is going to be done about the situation? And he immediately responded in a very aggressive manner to step back and mind my business. So I did step back, but I told him that, you know, I tried to identify myself as a community leader, that, you know, that I knew the major, and I just was wanting to know that something was going to be done. A lot of these times, these girls, you know, they might not have an advocate at home. They might not have anybody to speak up for them. He immediately again said, if you do not go inside your home and shut up, I will have you arrested. So at that point, I told him he's got to do what he's got to do because I wasn't going to go inside my home. I thought it was an unjustified threat, and I had no right. I told him that you are on my own steps that I pay for. You could simply go out to the sidewalk or take the girls or do what you had to do, but there was no reason to threaten me that way. He immediately called for backup. It took maybe 2 minutes for three cars to respond, lights flashing. When they arrived, I was just standing there. There was no attacks. There was no belligerence. There was no nothing. I was standing there with my hands in my pocket. He asked me to turn around. I did. He handcuffed me. At that point, he went through my pockets. This was all in front of the girls. He took all my possessions out of my pocket, and then he went up my pant leg, grabbed my genitalia. It's very hard. And then went up my butt, and it was groping in that, and then went all around my chest looking for, I guess, weapons. At that point, he put me on a step. I called him an obscenity for grabbing me and treating me like that. I told him it was a mistake that he would regret. At that point, I calmed down. Another officer that had just arrived on the scene said, look, man, this is not right. I'll try to help you. Let's go into the police car. Just calm down. And I don't know exactly what happened outside at that point. I did hear him say that he was not going to let me. I was going down the central booking because one of my other neighbors and board members, Dave Cochran, showed up in the scene, asked him questions, and he, you know, yelled out, he's going down the central booking. They transported me to Southern. I waited in a car for about 10 minutes. Arresting officer came over, started asking me questions about where I live. If I lived in an apartment in the home, I explained to him it was the entire place was mine. Questions, characteristics, things like that. And I asked him what was going to happen. I've never been arrested before. And he again became belligerent. I was locked in the back of a car, hands behind my back. The door was shut. And he started telling me, well, this is real. You didn't think so, but you're going down. You're going down to central booking, et cetera, et cetera. So I didn't say anything. I was transported to central booking. I was in there for about 20 minutes, and then I was escorted out. Uncuffed. That was the first time I was uncuffed at that point. I was taken back to the police district. I waited in a room for about an hour or two. I was finally transported to Major Bloodsworth's office. And the first thing he said was, no good's going to come out of this. Exact words. And when I asked him what was going on, what I was being charged, I'd never been told I was charged for. I don't know the law on it, but I was never run any rights or anything. And he just tried to describe the situation as, look, things happen. It was not appropriate, but it was sort of both your faults. You know, if you could just move on from this and get over it, you know, we'll deal with the guy in-house and the charges will be dropped. So at that point, you know, we talked, went back and forth. He said, I signed a citation. And I asked to leave, and he said he didn't want me to go on my own. He didn't want anything else happening to me. We are in Cherry Hill. My wife teaches two blocks from the police station in Cherry Hill. And I asked if I could just walk. He said no, so he transported me there. He never transported me back to my home, as this report says. And so I was dropped off at New Era Academy in Cherry Hill, and I went in and saw my wife, and that's the incident.
And the police, when we talked to them, and one of the things that they wrote here, but I want to talk about the kind of larger questions that came up in our conversations and the conversations I had with Dante and Robert Giroux. Were you a witness to all this, Robert?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. So the Anthony Guglielmi, who is director of the public affairs section, sent a statement saying the Baltimore Police Department works for the people of Baltimore, and we are incredibly grateful for their support and cooperation. But whether you're an elected official, the CEO of a major corporation, or even another law enforcement officer, you need to respect the investigative process and allow a police officer to conduct a thorough investigation free of influence, pressure, or interference. It isn't just inappropriate. It is dangerous and could lead to injury to citizens and to the officer. We may not agree with the manner in which calls are being handled, as is every citizen's right. However, there is a time and place and a manner for complaints about police conduct to be filed. As in this case, citizens have direct contact with the command members who resolve such disagreements and concerns every single day. So that's the statement of the police. And the police report was saying that making it seem as if you were interfering directly with his investigation of the two young women, of the young woman who was assaulted by another young man who's a couple years older than she.
I don't understand where he gets that from. For the majority of the time he was there, we never spoke. I never talked to him. We never had any interactions. I asked him a basic question, and I feel like I have a right to ask a police officer a question when there's two young girls who came to me. I feel that sense of responsibility. The way that he was talking to them, this whole demeanor did not really strike confidence in me that something was going to be done. So I wasn't asking for his secret tactics. I wasn't distracting him. I asked him a basic question. What is going to be done about this? I just want to make sure something's going to be done. That's harmless.
Chris, I want to ask you. The police report is clear that this officer asked you no less than three times once you approached him about that question, what's going to be the follow-up, what's going to be done about this. He asked you no less, according to this police report, no less than three times to step away, and you refused to do so.
I did step away the first time. I was not that close to him, but once the moment he said step up, back, I did. I did tell him that I had no reason to be told to leave my own property. I paid for that house. He was on my steps. The girls were sitting on my step. I tried to escalate the situation and tell him, look, I know the major. I'll talk to him later. No, no, no. And that's when he really lost it. You know, I know the major too, something to that almost verbatim. You know, do what you got to do, call him, whatever. And, you know, at my point, I was just, you could do what you're going to do. I'm not going to say anything else, but I'm certainly not going to be told to go into my house for no reason. And his attitude, his belligerence towards me from the get-go was just totally unnecessary.
Now, I would like to get a listener to join us here while we're talking about this at 410-319-8888 because it goes to a larger question of the interaction between the police and citizens in this community and the difficulties that have happened a lot in this town and the amounts of people who are arrested in this city. And that there are some police in Baltimore who have a very belligerent attitude when it comes to the citizens of the city, no matter whether you're black or white or whoever you are in this town, and that then that's part of the problem. So the question is, because there are a lot of really I would go on the limb in saying the majority of police in the city are hardworking men and women who are trying to do their job for the rest of us. So the question is, what do you take a situation like this from here? I mean, there are – now, I don't know your story, Robert Giroux. Why don't you tell us a bit about why you're accompanying this guy over here?
Well, I'm here because I found when I heard about the incident to be just classic irony because Chris has always been an advocate in the community for the police, say more than I have. I've been raising a teenage son in the area and have had numerous problems with the way the police handle teenage young men in the area from bouncing up against walls and continuously harassing them. And the situation that occurred there was just funny to me because a couple of years ago, and I remember the night distinctly, I was watching the Orioles being clobbered by the Texas Rangers. And I ran down to get some ice cream because the ice cream man was a couple of blocks away down on Wilkins. And on my way back up, you know, I was just walking along, and a policeman shined his light right on me and says, "What's up, faggot?" And I said, "Pardon me." And I realized that evening that although we as citizens are asked to look at police who do things in a rather bad apple manner, that in my zip code 21223. That if we're walking there, we're all subject. We're all thrown in. There's not one of us that's any good. And this happening to Chris really brought that up. And I've had, you know, continued minor run-ins with the police. The first time in my life, over 50, I've ever been handcuffed happened in Baltimore City. And the overall aspect of the community is that I moved up here to be in Baltimore because I fell in love with the architecture of the city. I fell in love specifically with Union Square and the whole thing there. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing that I'm sitting here tonight having moved my son here 5 years ago and thought that he'd have troubles interacting with people in the city, which has ended up being a total delight. And he's literally had to move back to Northern Virginia only because continued of harassment by policemen because he wants to skateboard and hang around Carroll Park. So that's where I sit tonight.
Now, I would just say this, because the police are not here to defend themselves. Let me just – specific to this case, Christopher, and then there is a larger question. And,
yeah.
Mark and I, and probably we could find a lot of people who've had very disturbing interactions with some very overzealous police officers. But two things that really stick in my mind when I read the police report, when I read your account, I was questioning and very curious about – why you did not give the police the benefit of the doubt when they asked you to step away, and you did step away, but they're claiming that you were impeding their investigation, that his primary focus was protecting this young girl, continuing this investigation, and that your interference forced him to take action towards you. And two things. He asked you to step away. He asked you to step away several times, or you were going to be arrested. Obviously, you did not comply with something because you were taken into custody. So I want you to respond to that. And also, once you were actually you described in horrible detail, the police officer's search of your groin, and but you called him a name as well.
I called him a name after that. After that happened, I was sitting on the steps in handcuffs in front of my neighbors, in front of my own home, for absolutely nothing. That's when I started.
What you view as nothing, the police officer obviously viewed it in a very different way.
Sure, but I'm talking from my perspective right now. So I mean, at that point, I was incensed. I was embarrassed. I was humiliated. I've never had anybody touch me like that in my whole life. To have it done on the steps of my own home that I've worked so hard to achieve in front of two young girls who came to me for help. Let's not forget that fact. Of course, I was incensed. I was absolutely outraged that someone could do that to me for whatever they perceive. Now, remember, you're saying that he's got a perspective, but I was there. And I know how it happened.
And
I know how I felt.
Your perspective, definitely.
And, you know, I reacted in a manner that was really right along the lines with how I was being treated. I was being treated like an animal. I was being humiliated and debased. So I'd respond like an animal. And I did. It took last about 40 to 30 seconds. I mean, it wasn't long. It was an outburst of anger, and then it stopped. And I read this report, and it's completely, almost absolutely patently false. There's almost nothing. A girl throwing up on my steps, that never happened. I mean, it's total imagination. I have a painter that's a witness to everything that happened and the two young girls. She never threw up. She stopped crying when I told her to stop crying. When they got there, the girl was not crying at all. All these times of telling me to step back, it happened in a matter of seconds. There was not several attempts. He told me to step back. I did. I tried to explain to him as elected community leader why I feel obligated to ask this question. He could have said, hey, you know, I said, I will take it up with the major later. Could have been done right there. And he just kept flipping out. Now, why should I have to go inside my own home? Because I did absolutely nothing. I don't understand why anybody would do that.
Now, and I want to go back to the phones if I could. There's people calling. I'd like to get them in this conversation because there's some larger issues here about police community relations and how police respond to things in our city. And I want to hear what our listeners have to say about that, because I think that is really kind of indicative of where we are. Dante Wilson, who's the executive director of ROCAP, Reclaim Our Children and Families Now Project, is on the phone with us, and he just called in from it. Dante, welcome. Good to have you with us. You got Dante there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you, man. Welcome. And as I said, we're going to go right to the phones at 410-319-8888. Lisa, you're on the air.
Yeah, we got you, man. Welcome.
Lisa, you there?
Lisa, we need you to turn your radio off and listen to Mark.
Hi, Lisa, you there?
Hello.
Welcome, you're on the air.
Hello. Okay, I'm sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, just calling just to just state in regards to asking what transpired with you, sir. I am an officer, so prayerfully everything will be okay with me just kind of commenting, but I'm also commenting as a citizen here. In the city, there are a lot of times when you have such cases, especially with a female who states, someone has done harm to them. Immediately, there's a process that has to take place, it's obvious you didn't understand that, granted that you felt like, hey, you wanted to know what was going to be done, but there's such a series of process that are going on, right in front of you in regards of just locating individuals, seeking what we call 36, looking for descriptions, getting on the air, trying to locate our rape detectors and things of that nature. But just on another note, just to kind of mention that being an officer in Baltimore City, I've been born and reared here all my life. I've been in Baltimore all my life, raised in East Baltimore, Caroline Street.
Mm-hmm.
And our city has just changed in so many ways. But I hope that this comment that I'm going to make to you puts your mind at ease to some extent. There are a lot of officers, sir. There are a lot of detectives, especially us that were reared and born in this city, that love this city, that will do anything to protect the citizens that live here, honestly. I wasn't there. I can't justify what happened between you and that officer, but just to let you know, there is a process in regards to the manner in which you were searched. That's a process, as you stated, for weapons, possible drugs. But just understand, sir, and I pray, my prayer is that you will not allow that one incident to make you feel as though that there are a lot of us that don't care, because that's not the case. And I hope that you can really, really understand that, and that's pretty much it.
Lisa, thank you for joining us. Good to hear from one of our officers. And Chris, you wanted to say something.
I did. And Lisa, first of all, thank you. And you're the exact reason why I've spent countless hours and doing everything I possibly can to assist the police officers in my community. I spearheaded an effort where we raised $4,325, let alone just 6 or 7 months ago. That was all out of private individuals. I gave $500 out of my own pocket to buy bulletproof vests for the undercover units that patrol our area. We've given numerous awards, had them out to our community meetings. I do nothing but preach constantly how much we need to support the police. I've worked with the patrol. We have guys on foot in our neighborhood. They're allowed to use my home for bathrooms and come get drinks, whatever they possibly want. I mean, Bob can tell you that. I mean, his own viewpoint of police has been tempered by my constant insistence that we need to support them. And so for me to be a community leader of over – we have 116 members for 4 straight years constantly harping that we need to protect the police, having them out to meetings, promoting them, going to cop walks, doing everything you can. And then to have that happen to me. And 5 of the officers on scene, 3 of them disagreed with the situation and did not want me to go downtown and tried to fight for that right. But the other 2, the arresting officer and the sergeant on duty, made the decision.
And I've heard leading police officers in the city say something that struck me that Lisa just referred to, her growing up and being from Baltimore, that a majority of the police in Baltimore City, and I don't care where a man and a woman lives and you know where they come from, but the majority of police in Baltimore City live outside the city. The only time they've come into the city is when they are patrolling the streets of Baltimore to get the job as police officer here. And there's a disconnect sometimes between some of the officers and people who live in the city. And that's very real. And I think that's something that needs to be – I think we can overcome and that you can make that work. But that's part of the problem. There's a real disconnect. And I think there are both fear and disrespect, especially of African-American folks in the city, on the part of some people from outside the city. And I think that's part of the issue that we face as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of work to do here to make this thing work right so that – Chris Taylor's and little Joe Taylor, who's not related to you, who may live 8 blocks away and is minding his own business and on his front step gets arrested, that all that stuff has to end, that there's a way for us to kind of address this so it doesn't happen. Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Nina, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, I just wanted to comment. I myself also was born and raised in Baltimore City, in East Baltimore. And I've had, you know, some experiences. I've never been a criminal. You know, I'm college educated. I'm a school teacher for Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I've visited my family who still lives or resides in East Baltimore, I've been profiled. You know, I might be sitting on the steps and, you know, police officer, get up. What are you doing? Why are you here? You know, and I think that really bigger than, you know, it just not being right, it's very dangerous. For police officers to be so disrespectful and so belligerent, because what I find amongst the young people is they don't have any respect for them because they don't respect them. And then what happens is, you know, at one time we didn't hear about police officers being shot. We didn't hear much about that as much as we do now. And I think that because the young people don't feel respected, they don't respect the police. And I can kind of understand where they're coming from. And so me as an educator, what do I tell them when I've experienced some of the same things? What do I tell them when they say, well, you know, you're asking us to, you know, respect people that don't respect us, or you're asking us to do things that are not being reciprocated for us? So what do I say to them as an adult? What do I say?
It's what do you say? I think as a teacher, I mean, I would sit and have a roundtable discussion with our kids about that. I mean, as a matter of fact, let me turn to Dante Wilson, because I think he has responded to that in many ways and how he would talk about that. And you can be stopped. I was stopped at the corner of Belvedere and Park Heights once. I call it walking while white. And I was going from a Jamaican carryout with my curry, and I was stopped by the police saying, "Can I see? What are you doing here? What am I? I'm walking to my car. Can I see your ID? No. You can't see my ID. I'm walking to my car." And the sergeant came and ended it, and we all went about our business. But it was ridiculous. I mean, it was, you know, you were just stopped because I just started to stop in a neighborhood where I know people, buy some Jamaican carry out, and go back to my office. So this, it happens all the time. This is not something that is a rare instances, unfortunately, as if you're white or black in a certain neighborhood and you shouldn't be there. 410-319-8888. But Dante, what, how would you respond to the teacher about talking to kids about this?
Well, when talking to the young people, we have to paint pictures for them, make it tangible for them. A lot of our interactions and experiences with police officers in Baltimore City, especially for young people right now, I guess the late 80s and the early 90s children, they don't really have the respect for the police officer. But prior to then, and when I was younger, you know, you had respect for police officers. You had officer friendly coming to your house and things of that nature. But we have to teach our young people that right is right, wrong is wrong. And then there needs to be some type of community awareness of some type of diversity training. And so officers may be able to deal with things differently. You know, a lot of officers in Baltimore City lives and reside in Pennsylvania, and I have no problem. But we got away from community policing. I recall a couple of years ago when my wife and I, we got arrested for picking up our children, and the police officer had the children out in the cold. And we made a comment to the officer about why not have the children in a car, why not have the children in a truck where it was warm. And right there, Quentin P. Smith, you know, he got on his, I guess, his power struggle horse. And as a result, what I did, I mentioned, and similar to Chris, because Chris mentioned Major Bloodworth. And I don't know what it is, but when you mention certain people's names, it's not that you're trying to throw power or trying to say, well, I'm going to tell your supervisors, but I'm in contact with somebody where we can deal with this appropriately because I have a relationship. But the officers never take it that way. And so the name I mentioned at the time, he's retired, Lieutenant Colonel Major Rick Hite, it turned the situation to worse. And so, you know, I had to spend 10 and a half hours in jail, go see the commissioner and things of that nature. So with the teacher, it really comes with educating on her behalf. It comes with community mobilizing. And then I think forms needs to be set up so we can build and strengthen the current relationship between officers and the communities. And so even with the situation with Chris, I think the officer called in, and, you know, there's a lot of great officers out here. But there are also a lot of not-so-good officers in here. And it's not just in Southwest District. It's in all the different districts. And it's a lot of people who have experienced things that Christopher has experienced and things of that nature. And so I think what needs to happen, and I want to commend Chris, because when you step up and expose wrong like this, sometimes there's some indirect retaliation that may happen towards you. And good brother, it becomes a lonely fight sometimes. And so I commend you. I commend Mark for having this topic on the air today. But the concern was the young girl. It wasn't that Chris, you know, I heard it. Let me back up one more.
We need to really get a break.
Anthony, we have to give a short break, and we'll come right back. Thank you for reminding me of that, Anthony McCarthy. We'll take a very short break and come back and let Dante finish his statement. We're going to go back to the phones. Leo and Bolton Hill and Charles and Jaleel, Kevin, we're going to come to your thoughts as well and to hear more from our guests in studio, Chris Taylor and Robert Giroux. I'm here with Anthony McCarthy. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community to prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We're talking about police-community relationships and the general sometimes lack of decorum and lack of respect between police and the community and vice versa sometimes. And what do we do about that? And this is inspired by Dante Wilson, one of our guests, who is the head of Reclaiming Our Children Project here in Baltimore City, who is a marvelous community worker and citizen, who told me about what happened to Chris Taylor, who is the president of the Union Square Association, was arrested for trying to, as he puts it, trying to intervene on the part of two young girls who said they were molested on the way to school, and tried to get some answers from a police officer and ended up himself being arrested, was let go by the major because they didn't want this thing exploding, but it has exploded anyway. And Robert Giroux is with us, who's a resident of Union Square with his own stories of what happens in that community and what's happened to him. The number here is 410-319-8888. We spoke to the police many times during the course of the day. They could not provide people for us today. Major Bloodsworth would have been here. He was off today after working all weekend. And we're having the conversation, and we'll continue to have these conversations with the police on the air with us and in communities as well as on the air like this. 410-319-8888. Before we go back to the phones, I wanted to hear what Robert Giroux had to say as well. Dante, we're finishing a thought as we went to break.
Yes, sir. And so I'm going to make it real short, but my concern is with officers and what they write in a report. And so when people observe the report, we take it as absolute truth because it's from one of our sworn-in officers. But there's officers who may not do the correct or the right thing, and so they fabricate things so you can have a case to be able to arrest somebody. And so sometimes with the report, I have a problem with the way that it's written, and then when you have the viewers read it, then we have the wrong perception, and then we can indirectly condemn Chris. Now, I also want to share one little other thing is that when the officer called in, she said that it was a process. Now, if we go back to community policing, it was Chris who called the officer to help assist and aid this young lady who's in our community who has been fondled, sexually. Something happened. Something occurred. A crisis occurred. And so as he called the officer and as they was wrapping things up, as a concerned citizen and someone who had to take the lead on the situation, I don't see nothing wrong with asking what's the next step. What are we going to do? How is this situation going to be handled? And the young lady so eloquently put it, it's a process because we have to do this, 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 this. And why couldn't that been a response from the officer? None of this would have happened right here. But thank you, sir, for calling. We're going to take it from now, but there's a process we have to do, and we have to do A, B, C, and D. And that would have answered Christopher's question. And the young girl would have been serviced, and we wouldn't even be on the radio right now. And so I have concerns about officers and their approaches. And then maybe there's some diverse awareness trainings that needs to take place on how you appropriately interact with citizens in the community, because everybody's not criminals. Everybody don't need to be searched for different things of that nature. We don't always have to be on the defense when we actually came to you to help assist the two young ladies.
Dante Wilson, one of our guests this evening, and I want to turn to one of our other guests here because he said it was very powerful. I would like we could have a discussion just on that, and I think we should, and have you on here with some of the others and with people from the police department and begin this kind of on-air discussion to kind of get patrolmen and community people to begin to talk to one another. But you were about to – during the break, Robert Giroux, you said something that I thought was pretty interesting about white and black and perceptions.
Well, In the Union Square community, it's a very diverse community, and it's aesthetically beautiful, and there's so many people that are into the arts, into music, and that's what draws a lot of us together. And my experiences have been having a black man with dreadlocks who very much looks the part get into my vehicle, and I'm scrutinized and pulled over by the police. And the only reason that was that there wasn't any cognitive recognition on the part of the police that maybe a black man and a white man are drawn together by things other than crime and drugs in the community, that we were together because we sell art, we love music, we love our community. And that's why he got into my vehicle, because I was picking him up down by Holland's Market. And that type of thing, when you talk stereotypical reactions by police, are not isolated. They're not the rotten in the barrel. It's a systemic issue. It's the same way we catch police or police catch criminals is by casting a broad net. Right now on the west side in Union Square, Carroll Park, Carroll Ridge, Holland's Market, Franklin Square, we have a wide net and cast. And all of us, unfortunately, that's why I'm here with Chris, get caught up in it every once in a while. But the issues when we get caught up only because of race are certainly issues that the community has to take into question on a greater level.
Anthony, I was going to the phone, unless you have something to add to this right now, do you?
There's so much I want to add, Mark, but we're running out of time. We have a bunch of folks on the phone. So I think that there are so many questions that I want to raise about race and why we're so outraged about this. And when this happens every day in every part of the city, where I live in Reservoir Hill, black kids, black men are pushed around and harassed by the police every single day. I wonder if a part of our outrage is that Chris is white with red hair and blue eyes, and that offends us that a police officer disrespected him. When this is happening all over the city, now we talked earlier today, Mark, about why it is important for us to train these officers to think differently. There are so many things that officer could have said to Chris that could have diffused this situation, but they're not trained to do that. They're trained to be adversarial, and the relationship between police officers and citizens is automatically adversarial. And unfortunately, because they believe and their lives are on the line, they draw this line between themselves and the citizens, and we've got to do a better job at making that connection. Chris has worked in that community for such a long time, has such a great relationship, but that relationship did not shield him from an officer who just could have handled this situation so differently. And as Dante said, who I just love and admire so much, but as Dante said, we wouldn't be talking about this right now if that officer had thought of a different way to communicate this process that the other officer called in.
410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Mark, Anthony, and
Leo,
and listeners. Do people understand, you think, the institutional racism that is extant or has existed for a long time with regard to the Baltimore City Police Department? Are we aware, as an underpinning, when we talk about police-community relations, that there was a judgment this year? Am I correct? Awarded to Sergeant Hobson and officers who filed a complaint from 15, 16 years ago?
Yeah.
And $2.5 million. And then more recently, we heard of a $280,000 settlement for 17 or 18 persons who had their property illegally confiscated by Southwest District officers. This business about police-community relations has been talked to death. That's not to say it's not necessary, but I don't believe there are intentions, honorable intentions, to really make it happen. And I point to the fact that police officers in general in this city are not required to meet a standard of the number of hours that they devote to community service in this community. Most of them live outside the city. That's been said. When I spoke with the mayor more than 2 years ago, or both mayors, there was talk of, well, it doesn't matter where the police officer comes from, as long as he's qualified. Well, it does matter that at least in part we recruit people who have empathy and have rapport with people in the community. And so there is no standard, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen and listeners, for police officers to meet with regard to determining that there is or will be police community relations. There is at every district a police community relations sergeant, one or two people assigned the responsibility of going out and speaking to community groups. That's all well and good, but the other officers have no such standard or other requirement, and consequently it falls through the cracks. So I want to conclude with an understanding that we have a stormtrooper mentality we're dealing with. Of course they're good police officers, but the Civilian Review Board, which is supposed to be in existence, is a joke. In point of fact, it's inoperative. We're looking at, in 2005, 2006, and onward, thousands of illegal arrests. People were put were sent to central booking and released without charge. So when you look at all of those things coming together, where are we going? Well, the city council says nothing about it because the city council is impotent.
The city council is what, Leo?
City council is impotent. They are a rubber stamp. They say nothing. If Martin O'Malley or Sheila Dixon or someone doesn't take a lead, and they do not either, then the city council sits on its behinds and whistles Dixie. The Human Relations Commission
our staff coming in, because you've said a lot, and we have a lot of the callers coming in, and you always have a great deal of good things to say, Leo. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on some of the things you've been hearing here, from what Anthony said all the way down to what Leo has just been saying.
Well, I think to start off with Anthony's comment, I think it's absolutely partly because I'm white that people feel outraged, but I think it's also partly because I work so hard for my community that it's impossible for anybody to say that I deserve this. Two, I understand where you're coming from. My family is diverse. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law are African-American. I've heard several stories of his discrimination, including one just recently in his hometown. My nephew and my niece are both adopted off the streets of Baltimore, one Latino, one African-American. So I understand where this comes from, and it's absolutely true. There's no doubt about it. I learned a very valuable personal lesson. I knew it. I had family members that I can relate to have it happen to you, you can never know until it happens to you. And in terms of community police relations, I mean, I think it's real. I think there is an effort by certain officers, but the patrol is what's out in front every day. It's the front line. And there really isn't much. I mean, if you don't know who I am in that neighborhood, how can you say there's an effort to be community relations? I mean, I've never seen that man before. And I'm at every event you could possibly name. So, you know, it's a tough, tough call. I mean, the one thing I can say that really disappoints me has been the reaction. What happened happened. The gentleman could have handled it differently. But to me, what's more depressing, what's more sad is the cover-up and the reaction that I've gotten from – where are our community leaders? Where are our city – where's our city leaders? Nobody spoke out about this at all. It's like they've circled their bandwagons and they've refused to admit anything. And, you know, I put trust in Beaufield. I put trust in Major Bloodsworth. I put trust in Mayor Dixon. I took that trust and built a small army in Union Square to help them. Okay, in a neighborhood that's never had, in our whole area that has no large community associations. And I believed in them. Mark, Bob will tell you. I mean, I'm out there every day preaching what we have to do. And they totally, utterly let me down. I'm a 33-year-old man trying to learn how to be a positive member of this world. How can you just not speak out for this? Is it that wrong to admit that something happened that was a mistake?
And this stuff does happen every day in Baltimore City. I mean, Don Taylors can tell stories about what happens to young men in this community all the time. We had an interview we did when they were in the stories we were doing about the attempt to, which is still going on, the attempt to shut down the public defender's office, their local office on Park Heights. And I interviewed people there who had been there, and one of the men there, in his 40s, I believe he was, has said, admitted up front, look, I've done time. I'm trying to go straight. I've been a cook for the last 5 years. I'm on probation, but I'm not lying about that, but I'm really trying to work right. He works at Jalal, mm-hmm. the Muslim carryout shops in Baltimore as a cook. And he said, and I was arrested. And I said, what were you arrested for? And he says, arrested for a straw. And so we were talking. And I went back to my, so I said, no, I know a lot of jargon from the street, you know, in the corner, but what's a straw, man? I never heard it. What do you mean? What's a straw? He said, a straw. He was busted because he was black, had a record, and had a straw next to him on his front seat of his car that they said he used for drugs that later proved to be nothing but a straw with Coca-Cola in it, and rather than Coke, and that he spent 3 months in jail over a straw and having been on probation. Now he's out, but these things happen too much.
Way too much.
And that's the kind of stuff that needs to end. You were talking earlier about to me on the phone, about the gangs in the area and where the concentration needs to be, as opposed to your son getting busted for walking across railroad tracks, and that there are gangs in your neighborhood that need to be addressed.
Yeah, I mean, the scariest thing to me is that what if I'd been taken down to central booking and left there, which most people are? I got lucky. I did get released.
You're lucky because you knew Bloodsworth, and Bloodsworth, you worked together in the community. That's why you were lucky.
There's no doubt. But I worked hard at those relationships. And my question is, what if I was left there? What if one of the gentlemen that I helped in some way or another get locked up, guy got in a cell with this gentleman? I mean, this is someone's life. You can't just come to their house no matter what you're saying that I did. I mean, unless you have a verbal situation or an attack that I'm about to, and just take me. You just took me from my house. You have five men with guns standing around me, my hands behind my back. What could I have done at that point? I've never experienced that sense of hopelessness. And I absolutely concur with Anthony that this is a situation that's way beyond, you know, it's obviously there's a racial component to it.
I want to hear from Robert and Dante, but tons of people are calling in. Let me just get to a call. We'll come right back to Robert and Dante at 410-319-8888. Next up is Charles. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing, Mark? Hi, Chris.
Welcome.
Really sorry that this happened to you, Chris.
Thank you.
Let me just say, This happens all the time. And while very few people will admit to it, while a lot of it has to do with black and white, a lot of it is economics. You don't hear about this kind of thing. And I was talking to some friends of mine, and I was saying, you know, I bet you if we lived out in Delaney Valley where houses are $500,000, $700,000, we could sit around and probably urinate on our front lawns and wouldn't even receive a citation. However, if you walk down the streets of Baltimore, this thing happens so, in, particularly in the inner city, in some of the, you know, in some of the economically depressed neighborhoods, it happens so often. And it's not that people are hiding anything. I mean, because everybody knows that it's happening. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like nobody is doing anything about it. You know, it's like no one cares about, you know, poor, downtrodden people. And so their only expression, you know, for that is anger. And so it doesn't surprise me that, Chris would get angry and yell out. I mean, look at the situation up at in Cambridge, Massachusetts with Skip Gates. He yelled and screamed out. And we're talking about a person that is highly educated, obviously is economically secure, but this happens so often in poor, downtrodden communities. Everything from Pigtown, which is primarily a mixed community, but, you know, at one point it was primarily a white community, to Park Heights, a predominantly black community. It happens all the time. And so for the police department to circle their van, you know, to circle their wagons and yes, this happened, and to write up reports to suggest that, this person was out of control, and that's something that they always do. I mean, in every field, education, I mean, the police departments, they always circle the wagon, and everybody wants to be right. No one is like, can admit to them because they are so fearful of what could happen to me if I'm wrong. But, I mean, if you're wrong, you're wrong. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Charles, thank you so much. I think that the more honesty in about all this from the police or anybody else is what really is needed here, not hiding the facts. Let me try to get another call in here because I want to go back to Robert and Dante for some final thoughts and to Anthony as well. 410-319-8888. Jaleel, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings. How you doing?
Greetings, Jaleel.
Hey, I concur with the last couple calls. I got to commend him for doing this, coming forth. This has happened to me twice. I'm a well-known business owner downtown Baltimore. Been in business Baltimore for 20-something years. Family's been there 40. I've been a community organizer, and currently I work in federal law enforcement and security. I got to tell you, the best correctives is going to have to be that you're going to have to legally and financially hold them accountable. This is the only way, we, like you said, many of the callers have said, we've got community policing. People don't want to hear about it. We have wonderful police officers who do get up every day, love the city, and do their job, and they do it commendable, very well. However, for those bad, they have to be held accountable, and their commanders have to be held accountable, and the city has to be accountable. And the FOP are the ones who are going to rally and prevent people, prevent their force, argue the issue that, hey, when the city council once before, I believe they tried to pass a resolution to get people who work in law enforcement to live in a community.
Mm-hmm.
It was defeated. So
yeah, because it's illegal. You can't do that. But anyway,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're arguing their position, but there are tons and tons and dozens of issues like this happen every day. It happened to me twice. I had to make an arrest. So somebody broke in my car, took my bag. I called the police officer. He took a report. I sat there and behind him watched the person come down the street with my bag, informed him, walked over, grabbed the person, made a citizen's arrest, brought him to his car, and then he threw her in the car, and then she identified the person who, up to a block away, went up there, confronted him. I told the officer at that point, I said, listen, I need to ascertain the information because I need the contents of the bag as opposed to the arrest. Can we ascertain that? When I asked that question, he got belligerent, upset, out of control, threatening to arrest me on the block that we have been doing business on for 40 years. So it happens every day to people. And the question is corrective. I think the gentleman needs to go ahead forward, have his painter get a deposition, go forward in the court, and hold them accountable because every day this is going to continue to happen, and a corrective has to be their CYA, they're covering their behind, so therefore they have to be taught a legal lesson.
Jaleel, thank you so much for being part of the show. I appreciate your comments. I'd like to hear a quick – we don't have like 4 or 5 minutes left, so let me go to Robert Joyner. You want to say something? I'm sure Dante does too.
Thank you. The caller that called in about the economic issue was something that I had wanted to express prior to the call, and I think when we start looking at neighborhoods turning around and especially gentrification, or the term gentrification, to absolutely throw everything out and turn it into a, quote, white community, I don't think is correct community development. Now, in order for correct community development to take place, is and Chris is working on a very grassroots level, and I'd like to say that I'm a part of it also. We have to have affordable housing and good education for everyone, regardless of their socioeconomic race situation. So how do you do that in a city? I mean, you can't throw everyone out and have everyone have a pair of Birkenstocks and a Volvo and put a bunch of Starbucks in. That is not necessarily what we see over in the Hollins Market, Union Square area. So if we're going to have a diverse community where we can provide education, food, clothing, and housing for people who don't have a lot of money, it's going to be mixed. Now, if the police can't come to the point and understand that everyone there is not a criminal. Some people are just barely making it there. Others do quite well, like I do, and I care. And as far as having a white guy sitting here, and it goes on every day, I'll tell you, my last experience was when I saw on Lemon Street, and I live right on the corner of Lemon Street on an alley, I saw a black man beat down. Then he was handcuffed and then beat still on the street with his handcuffs on. I came out of my house, and I said to the officer, "What's going on out here? Get back in your house, sir." So what's going to happen and what the powers to be are going to have to start understanding is that right now in this country, there's a convergence with the downtrodden, there's a convergence with those who have nothing, and the middle class is being squeezed too. The white middle class is being squeezed, and I want to be a part of it, and anything that I can voice with Chris about this in our community, certainly that's why we're here this evening, and we thank this show.
Robert Joy, I think you've ended up having the last – Dante, you have 30 seconds to close with.
Well, once again, thank you, Chris, for coming to the show. But I think we need to do something with the young ladies, because it's not just about the unjust that happened with Chris, but it's the follow-through to see what's going on with the young lady. Is she okay? Has her needs been met? What procedures or process that we go to try to find or canvas the communities for who did such an act to her? Because the thing is to serve and protect the community, whether it's done by the police, whether it's done by community associations, or the different members and residents of the communities. And so if it has to go to a further extreme, I want to support you 100% with that, Chris. And I thank you so much, Mark, for having this show this evening.
Dante Wilson, thank you for joining us tonight and for bringing this to our attention. Chris Taylor, thanks for being willing to bring your story to the public and join this conversation. Robert Drew, pleasure to meet you. Thank you for your words. They were very strong and apt. And Anthony McCarthy, it's always a pleasure to be a co-host with you. Thank you so much. The Mark Steiner Show is a production. And thank you all, by the way, for calling in and writing in and making the show what it is. Your thoughts and comments were really important for tonight's discussion, and I appreciate you being part of the show. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Justin Levy. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, and Gabe Pinder. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.